Blog Talk Radio.
Better than yesterday. Fuckers caught me off guard.
Yeah, I was like right in the middle and all of a sudden, bam.
lights, everything. Whole thing went dark.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't know what their problem is.
I don't either. It's not. I mean, it wasn't. It was about music. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, I was waiting for someone to hit me up. He hasn't done that yet. We'll see what happens. He might show up, he might not. I posted we had a special guest. Now we had a special guest today. But I did confirm with Emilio he'll be here tomorrow. So tomorrow will be next week's Sand Crow Radio Show.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because next week is only one day. Yeah.
We're going to do just Thursday. Mm-hmm.
I remember.
Yeah. So, no, there's a lot of things going on. Like, everybody wants to know what's going on and who's going to be on next year and what's going to happen and somebody put
I
out
I don't
today
even want to know. I'll find out when it starts. Yeah.
He you put know. Up, how is that guy's name? He played in Mask.
Oh, Sam Elliott.
There you go.
Yep.
But, yeah.
They're talking about him playing in the show?
Yeah, something like that, I guess. Wow. I don't know. So we'll see what happens.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but yeah, he was. I texted him earlier and would have talked to him about a couple things he's been doing the last couple days, and it's been very good.
Yeah. I can't wait for the next season to start. My lord.
You're not the only one. I got a lot of emails today. A lot of emails. But I went to, let me see. I went to,
Well, like I said, you have to understand something. I'm excited that they're going to have another season. But I'm not one of those, I got to know who's going to be in it. You know, I'll just wait until the season starts.
Uh-huh.
So, that's how that is.
Yeah, I had, I went to court today. Pretty funny.
And?
Oh, it's pretty funny. My attorney friend was there. And he came in, he went up and he talked to the clerk. And he said, it's going to be dismissed. He said, I got a preliminary and a sentencing in Department 5. You're on your own. And out the door he went. So they go through about 4 cases, and then they call me up there, and I get up, and I tell them that I was rusty. He just texted me. He's not going to be able to make it. He's got some stuff going on.
Okay.
But I get up there and he asked me, and he said, oh, I saw you're represented by an attorney. I said, well, he's got a preliminary and a sentencing in Department 5.
Right.
I don't care. I want him here. So he tells the chick to locate him. So I go back. I sit down. I'm texting him. I look across and his attorney texting the same guy, and he looks over at me and he goes, I'm going to do this. He's over there. Okay. So we get up there now, and he tells the judge he's going to do it. And he says to me, he says, well, I see the last time you were convicted of a speeding ticket was in 2011. I said, yes, sir. He said, you think 80 miles an hour is kind of fast? I said, well, Your Honor, I was on my bike. And he looks down at the ticket. He goes, oh, a Harley. What kind of a Harley? And I said, a Dyna. He goes, you know, those are capable of going over 100 miles an hour. And I said, not that day. Everybody in the courtroom started laughing. The clerk started laughing. And he turned as red as a fucking beet. And he said, well, I'm going to dismiss your case because there's nobody here to help on your prosecution. I said, thank you, Your Honor. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I turned around and walked out.
Wow.
So he says he's having a, Rusty said he would call in, but he's having a coughing, he's coughing too much. There's something going around, I got it. I got a little bit of it myself. I took some stuff for it earlier.
Usually I just mute you and then I cough and then I come back.
I was doing too.
Oh, this way I'm not being rude. You know, like, when there's people that call in on the show and they're talking, you know, I don't want to do that to someone.
Mhm. Yeah, somebody else is texting me. They're not going to be able to call in either. It's okay. It might be a short night.
So I said, ta-da! It's just us.
You know, I'm going to tell you something. Somebody sent me something today, and I really like, this is crazy. But if you go to the mall,
right.
there's a guy there selling, they're like mind-boosting glasses. And this girl was perfectly healthy, 20-year-old, tried them on at the mall in Temecula, north of me. And she suffered a seizure from these glasses.
Wow.
But yeah, it's crazy. So, yeah, tomorrow night we're good.
Yep, yep.
But yeah, it's getting crazy. Like, there's a, and these guys were washing their car.
Yeah.
And they gave him a ticket for washing their car in the driveway.
I saw that. How crazy is that? Oh, I don't know if it was washing the car or washing the driveway. I know what you're talking about. I I didn't go into particular, like,
well, it is a
story.
It's a petty law, but you got to remember, if they can't get you on something else, they're going to try and fuck you with whatever they can.
I know. Like I said, you know, and since, you notice that up here, you know, the funny thing is there's stuff that I do, and it's just like, okay. There's some days I'm waiting for someone just to roll up, and it's like, are you serious? You know, because it's just sometimes the way they look at you, and it's like, what? I'm not doing anything wrong. But, you know, it is what it is. It's a whole
mm-hmm.
different ballgame out there, you know?
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, I'm just texting somebody. I'm just texting. Rusty's texting me. I'm texting him back. But he was
right.
gonna be the guest tonight.
There's plenty of time to still have him.
Oh yeah. He doesn't have to be. Yeah. I'd rather have somebody that feels good about doing it instead of trying to cough and sneeze and all that shit. I have enough problems. I have enough problems with trying to keep the sound right.
Yeah, well, not just that. You know, I hope that you got my message because I didn't want, you know, him to think I was rude because all of a sudden it was like I was in the middle of talking and bam, I'm like, what the heck? And I went to go call back, and it's like, no show for, I think it's like 22 hours. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You know, because, I mean, he's decent to talk to, you know what I mean? And I didn't, like I said, I just don't want him to think I was being rude and, like, just forget it. I'm like, I hung up. No.
Yeah.
So... Yep. So, are you excited about upcoming Christmas? Or you can't wait for it to be done with? Yeah.
A little bit of both.
Yeah,
I got a couple. I got a couple of aunts that all they like to talk about is dead people.
I don't know what it is. You know, people do that and. Sometimes you just have to sit there and, okay.
No.
Yeah.
I have a choice.
I don't know. I used to hear stuff all the time. I ever since I was a kid, I have a good way of just blacking stuff out. I can sit in the same room and, what'd you say? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
The same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of going on. And I wanted to talk to Rusty about it. They went down to the Naval Hospital yesterday and handed out gift bags. And I guess they donated the money from the shoes. That'll brighten some guys' Christmas this year. But what I'm going to do, I already had this queued up just in case, but I'm going to play this right now. This is one of Rusty's interviews. I'll play this right now, and then we'll come back after this.
Right.
I'd like you to take people back to where Attica 7 started, you know, realizing for the first time that you may never see daylight again.
Yeah.
And what your emotions were like when you were putting these songs down on paper, and how you got that inspiration, okay?
Yeah, visualize yourself.
Hold on.
But what I'd like to do is I'd like you to take people back to where Attica 7 started. You know, realizing for the first time that you may never see daylight again.
Yeah.
And what your emotions were like when you were putting these songs down on paper, and how you got that inspiration, okay?
Yeah, visualize yourself in a cell 6x8, 8x12, whatever it is. You've just been ripped out of society with a possibility of never having a chance to ever see your family again outside of a cell somewhere or a visiting area in a prison while you're either shackled behind glass or under guard. And you're not expecting any of this to happen. It just happens. And all of a sudden, everything you've held dear, everything that you love, is out of your reach. You know, it changes the way you think about things. It changes the way you think about what you do. Instead of just going out randomly and doing what you feel like doing, it makes you think before you do those things with those large consequences. And when you're in a motorcycle club, you're going to pay twice the consequence, maybe three times, maybe four times of what the average person is going to pay for any action that you may take, or even a reaction to being attacked yourself. You become not the victim, but the...
Hold on a minute, let's see if we can clean this up a little bit.
Okay.
But what I'd like to do is I'd like you to take people back to where Attica 7 started. You know, realizing for the first time that you may never see daylight again.
Yeah.
And what your emotions were like when you were putting these songs down on paper, and how you got that inspiration.
Yeah, visualize yourself in a cell. 6x8, 8x12, whatever it is. You've just been ripped out of society with a possibility of never having a chance to ever see your family again outside of a cell somewhere or a visiting area in a prison while you're either shackled behind glass or under guard. And you're not expecting any of this to happen. It just happens. And all of a sudden, everything you've held dear, everything that you love, is out of your reach. You know, it changes the way you think about things. It changes the way you think about what you do. Instead of just going out randomly and doing what you feel like doing, it makes you think before you do those things with those large consequences. And when you're in a motorcycle club, you're going to pay twice the consequence, maybe three times, maybe four times, of what the average person is going to pay for any action that you may take, or even a reaction to being attacked yourself. You become not the victim, but the perpetrator, defending yourself because you're in a motorcycle club. So you have to think about all these things every day. It's like walking on the edge of a razor blade. And when you're doing your time, it's like walking on the edge of a razor blade the whole time you're in, because you don't want to lose your good time, but you can't be weak, so you have to do whatever you got to do to survive honorably while you're on the inside. Then when I got sentenced after being in over 21 months in MDCLA, they shipped me around a little bit, put me in the hole and a few other places waiting for my paperwork to come through, and then I got sent up to Oregon to a prison up there, and while I was up there, I was working out in the yard at least 5 days a week, and I rediscovered music totally by accident. I wasn't even into music. I knew how to play guitar. I'd played since I was 9. Took lessons from the time I was 9 till the time I was 15. Learned how to read, write music, finger picking, classical, the whole deal. But then I got out of it, got into motorcycles, and just picked up the guitar every once in a while, sometimes not for years. But it was in my head, the structure of music, the feeling, it was all there. So I don't know what happened, but after being up there for a few years, I was walking past this room where they did a lot of band rehearsals and the band program for inmates, and I just got inspired to start playing. And I joined a blues band, actually a blues rock band, and I said, I'll come in, I'll play bass, guitar, I don't care. So they said, all right, come in and play bass. Well, I came in, the bass player hadn't gone home yet that I was replacing, so I played guitar, and they said, no, we want to keep you on the guitar. So I said, all right, you mind if I write some songs? They said, yes. So I wrote one song the next week, another song the next week, and I was writing new music every week. Then they had a riot up there, and they sent me to Texas. And when I got to Texas, I took a whole portfolio of my music with me. And 3 days after I got out of the hole up there, I was playing a concert in front of all the inmates. It was like 1,800 people in that yard. Songs, they said, yeah. So I wrote one song the next week, another song the next week, and I was writing new music every week. Then they had a riot up there, and they sent me to Texas. And when I got to Texas, I took a whole portfolio of my music with me, and musicians, not a bar band, not a cover band, and it's just evolving into what I wanted it to be.
What would you say is your favorite Attica 7 song?
That's hard to say, but Devil's Daughter, Serial Killer, All or Nothing, Lockdown. I can keep going. Man, being the whole damn album almost.
I can't agree with you with that. I mean, there's not a bad song on the CD. But
that's hard to say, but Devil's Daughter, Serial Killer, All or Nothing, Lockdown. I can keep going, man. It ended up being the whole damn album almost.
I gotta agree with you with that. I mean, there's not a bad song on the CD. But can you take us back to where you were physically and mentally when you wrote one of these songs and what was going through your mind there?
When I wrote Lockdown, I was in a cell, and if you listen to the lyrics in Lockdown, it's an inmate, and it's definitely a serious prison song. Another one, No Redemption, wearing a number on your chest, having eyes in the back of your head, because that was the thing. You always had a number on, and you had to have eyes in the back of your head all the time.
Do you feel that had you not went to prison, that you would be where you're at today musically?
If I didn't go to prison, Attica 7 wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be playing music. It completely changed my life when I went in there. I redirected my thinking, and I'm glad. I love the music. I love what I'm doing. I love what I'm doing with my business, building these bikes. I love the music even more. And the TV, the different things that I'm into now, I mean, I'm enjoying it every day. That's one thing I can say is out of that experience, when I finally did get out, I appreciate every day. Even a bad day is a great day.
One of the things that I noticed that when I went out to cover the Upward Tour is after I saw your band, there was an it factor, a magic, a something that that people can relate to and forget about problems and stuff like that with your music. And I fully believe that people are going to jump into your genre from others and come together with your music. What do you feel is the reason for that?
I think one of the reasons that that our music is so universal, it's not just one little niche like metal or just rock or something else. It draws people from all different genres because there is a little blues influence in there. There's the rock influence. There's the metal influence. And every riff that's in there was written with feeling. I mean, when I write riffs for music, I don't just write riffs to write riffs. I write riffs that I feel, hooks that I feel. And it's got to really, like, make the hair stand up on the back of your neck kind of a thing. You know, it's like I know when I got those sweet spots in the groove, and that's what I incorporate into my choruses, into my verses, the breakdowns. I try to get the whole thing woven together so it's a feeling that you have. It's not just music. It's you feel the music, and that's important. You've got to feel those hooks. That's what the hooks are, you know. And the same with the lyrics. When I write lyrics, 90% of the time, I write the lyrics after I've done all the riffs and the choruses, everything, they fall together. But I start out with the first line. First line is always the hardest line when I write, because it sets the pace for everything to follow. And then it just starts flowing like water. And it's very, a little bit of poetry. But it always tells a story almost every time. I don't want to just write ridiculous sentences, you know, just to fill the void with vocals. You know, I want it to tell a story. If you wrote it as poetry or just as a story, it has a beginning and an end, usually.
My photography and my video is I try to look at things as a voyeur in letting people see the world through my camera. I see that same thing in your music. I mean, people are able to come into where you were and experience that, or, you know, relate things to their lives. What's your trick to letting people see that?
Well, like in the song Serial Killer, I'm not a killer. I've never killed anybody. But just as when you're an actor, you know, you act, you kill people in the movie, that doesn't make you a killer. But you have to be into that part. You have to become that person. And when I wrote that song, I really had to get deep into the character of this serial killer that was telling the story in his lyrics. And if you listen to the lyrics in that song, that's what it is. This is a guy that he's a killer. He doesn't necessarily want to be a killer. He can't help it. The demons take over. And he does what he does. It's not like he's looking for this to happen. It happens, and he tells it as the story comes about. When you're listening to the song, it's very evident that he's almost a victim of himself.
Wow. See, and I think that's the magic that all your songs have is you let people see it from the real thing. I mean, the real deal. The you know, what's in the mind of a serial killer. I mean, who knows that?
Yeah, I tell you, I've been in some places, I've been around some people that were that kind of people, and it emanates out of some of them. It just emanates so bad. I mean, you can feel it before they even say anything. And then there's others that they're like multiple personality type of people. They would be the nicest people in the world, but the other side of them is the homicidal side. the flips, and it's like they're the most dangerous ones because they're a chameleon, and you can never trust people like that. But I've been in situations with a lot of people that are that type of people, both those kind of killers, and to try to put your mind in that place is it takes a minute to get there. And if you want to write something that's believable with that feeling, you have to get your mind there. You have to be that person to do it.
That's a scary thing to attempt to get into a place like that and get out.
Yeah, I tell you, I remember specifically when I did that, and I remember the feeling I had, and it wasn't a good feeling, let me tell you. I wouldn't be proud to think like that on a daily basis, let me tell you.
Well, there's not too many writers that are going to be able to come up with the music that you have, and again, I think that's probably the biggest part of listening to your CD that's out right now, that it's just every song on there. I mean, I instantly bought the CD, and there's not a song on there I don't like.
We've got a really, really good team of players right now. Without even having a bunch of rehearsals under our belt, we can go out and play shows, and we did. And a lot of the time you take players, you're going to have to play at least 7, 8, 9 rehearsals together before they're actually tight enough to go out in public. We didn't even need to do that in this case.
Yeah, I saw you guys on your second show, and I was hooked right then and there. I think I even really got in trouble because I didn't photograph any other bands but you guys. But it pretty much paid off. And I think the other thing I liked about Attica 7 is that it was so cool to see you guys after you perform. You're at the merch booth, and you're there till the time you guys leave. I mean, you were there with a solid line of fans taking pictures and signing autographs. And I mean, to me, that's a true rock star. I mean, you were passionate. It's like you guys, if you could afford it, would go out there and play for free, you know, just to play that music. I mean, that's kind of what I got from that.
Yeah, if it was just about the money, we would have quit doing this a long time ago. I would have quit way before I hooked up with the lineup that we have now. Money has nothing to do with it. And the fans, they're the most important, and we really appreciate it when we see these fans that come from 100 miles away or more to see the show, you know, stay at motels, and I mean, that's really true fans, and we're going to do everything we can to make that experience as good as we can for them. And when the show's over with, we're going to spend time with them, we're going to sign autographs, give them merch, you know, sell them merch, give them merch, everything, you know, we're going to make the experience as best we can for them.
It was funny watching you guys, you know, have fun with this, where you were throwing out the shot glasses and people were catching them as they're going by, and
yeah.
And you know, the parts that a lot of the fans don't get an opportunity to see, like well, you know, the rock star life where you're living in truck stops and things like that. But and you even had on your tour manager Al. Wasn't there a couple of episodes with him where some funny things happened there? With
there's episodes of Bell all the time. I have fun with him daily, man. He's great entertainment. Yeah, I left him at least one truck stop. I actually sent him out to check the rear tire one time, and while he was out there, I locked the door, drove off, and left him at the truck stop.
Hey, Al, come up here, will you? What's up, Rusty?
I think that rear tire's low, man. Would you check that back, the tag axle?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, man, thanks.
Hey, shut that door when you get out, will you?
We're going to leave his ass again, man. I got to lock this door. Another time at another truck stop, he was outside doing whatever, fueling or something, and I took off, and he actually ran jumped up on the mirror of the bumper and held onto the thing, so I couldn't get rid of him that time. I had to stop and let him in. And I think at another venue, we were backing out, and I had him help back the bus out. He was guiding me as soon as I got out and took off. And I heard these, I had the door open still while I was driving. It sounded like Fred Flintstone trying to catch the bus with those heavy feet. I said, man, this guy can run, man. I had no clue he could run like that. I finally let him in that time, too. He deserved it. You know, he had to run quite a ways, you know. So.
You know, musically or through life in itself, if you could go back in time and change something, what would you change?
You know, it's funny because you say that, like, you know, I've thought about this many times. I would love to change the mistakes I made that sent me to prison. But then I think if I changed what sent me to prison last time, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I'd be going in a whole other direction. So I took a very bad experience that happened to me in 1999, and I turned it into a good thing. I took everything I had to work with and flipped it. And because of that, I'm so happy with everything I'm doing, I don't want to change that. And I would have to take that back, because there's really not much to regret since I've been released. It's all been a pretty good trip.
Your bike building. I mean, this shop is, I mean, you're sitting in front of, what, an $80,000 bike right there, and your bikes are amazing. Where is that going to go with Attica 7, you know, taking off?
You know, I look at what I have going on here like a triangle. It's like the devil's triangle. I've got Illusion, I've got the music, and I've got the TV. And it's all interlinked, and they all work for each other. So what one does pulls the other up, and they're all connected all the time, and I love it. It's a great cross-promotional type of a thing. Personal branding, bands brand, bikes brand, everything's doing well. So the better the music does, I think the better the bike business will do.
And the TV, Sons of Anarchy, that's a huge, huge show. I mean, how did that happen?
You know, it's just that was luck. You know, Kurt Sutter's a great guy. I really like him. He started that show 5 years ago. And he's a smart guy. He went out and did his homework. He came by here. He's visited many Hell's Angels. He wanted to go to the top of the food chain and learn about clubs, and he did. And it's a drama. You know, it's not real, but it can be real. If you're going to be entertaining, you have to be dramatic. You have to have a lot of that stuff going on. That's what people need to not lose focus of. You know, it's a fantasy, but it's great. You know, but he did a lot of work in reality so that he could have the most realistic of fantasies. And look at it. It's a cult following, man. The thing's crazy. It's over 5 million people regularly watching this. I'm honored to be part of it.
I've had the incredible fortune to travel with you guys on the road for what seems to be months, but it's only been a couple weeks.
with you wear on us a lot. It does. It seems like yours to me, you know what I mean?
I don't make too many mistakes, but the ones I do make are pretty big, so.
Oh, like leaving me in a truck stop? Yeah, that was a good one. At 4 a.m, I think it was?
Yeah, it was pretty cool,
oh,
too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I felt pretty
I'm
bad
glad I had my phone with me. That's all I could say. Or you guys would have been all the way to L.A. before you figured it was
yeah. Yeah, I don't think we're going to put footage of that up there, so. But one of the things that I noticed is that everything that you do, whether you're driving a bus or orchestrating the band and your organizational skills and your leadership skills and when we go places, like last night, the Rainbow, after you played at the Key Club, I mean, they closed the place down, but you and your few select friends were allowed to stay. Something about you is just you know, people love. You know, what do you think that is?
I just try to treat everybody the way that I want to be treated. And I look at people, you know, and I give them the equal respect that they deserve. And there's so many people out there that feel entitled to take. You know what I mean? And I hate that. Nobody's entitled. like that. You should treat everybody the way you want to be treated, because when somebody treats you bad with disrespect, you're not happy. And the people you treat bad feel the same way. It's no different. Nobody's entitled to treat anybody bad that doesn't deserve it, you know? So treat people the way they deserve to be treated, you know? And people they'll appreciate that. That's all. Just being fair, man. Consequences are the most important thing to think about. Everybody, the action that you do, whether it be good or bad, always has consequences. If you do negative actions, there's negative consequences. The bigger the action, the bigger the consequence. And those consequences don't go away. The action takes 2 seconds. We're all capable of all types of violence, all types of good, all types of bad. Anybody, I mean, from the smallest person, it doesn't matter your size. It matters your will to do it. And there's a lot of people out there, and they say, I don't care. I don't give a fuck. Well, you know what? You're going to care when you get nailed. You're going to care when you pay those consequences. Because all this stuff out here, if you've never done time, been locked away in cells for a long time, you have no idea the consequence. And the people that have done it and say, oh, it ain't shit. Well, I don't even fuck those guys. Their opinion doesn't matter anyway. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. What's it like being in a little cell, solitary?
You know, you get used to it, I'm sad to say, but you'd have to. If you don't get used to it, you're not going to survive. You're going to go nuts. People are adaptable. You can do just about anything, and over time, somebody's going to be adapting to whatever it is, you know, whether it be torture. In this day and age, there's not physical torture, but they've refined mental torture to a fine art. And if you've got the government pissed off at you, they have many ways to mentally break you down. And they'll try, you know. And if you're strong, you won't be broke down, but you're not going to have a good time while they're trying.
Absolutely. Attica 7, it's www.attica7.com. We got some great stuff coming up in the future, you think, here?
Yeah, I'm real excited about what's going on right now. I don't want to get into the details because it hasn't happened yet, and it's not good to talk about things that haven't happened yet with certainty, but we've got some good things coming up in 2013. I think you guys will be seeing us in many places.
Okay, so right now your fans can get CD on your website.
They can go to our website. They can go to iTunes, Amazon. I think FYE or FYI, one of the stores. And Best Buy.
Best Buy?
Yeah.
All right. And merchandise, shirts, things like that?
We got shirts, CDs, hats, posters, and the stuff's growing. You know, it's kind of in the infancy right now.
Music videos on the coming up?
Yeah, we do have one music video for Serial Killer that's done right now. I don't know if we're going to re-edit it. It's a good video, but I want to have a great video. So we'll see what happens there. We have plans for a series of videos coming up here within the next 2 to 3 months.
Fantastic. All right. Well, the fans are going to be in for a treat. I mean, like I said, I've been fortunate enough to travel with you guys, and you are my ultimate favorite. I listened to a lot of bands, been with a lot of bands, but when people ask me what was your favorite tour, I'm going to have to say Attica 7.
Right on, man. You want me to pay you now? Well, I left my wallet.
Check would be fine.
My wallet's at home. Sorry, man.
Actually, I was thinking about a new bike. I mean, that one behind you looks pretty
what?
Good. So. A new bike.
What?
Bike.
I can't hear you. What?
Motorcycle.
Huh? I can't hear him. I've been playing so much, I can't hear.
That thing behind you lit up really
good.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
My sight's getting messed up, too, man. I got to start getting rest.
Yeah.
I'm Rusty Coons with the band Attica 7, and you've been watching Rock Biz Magazine.
Yeah. Great. We're out. That's a wrap. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. Ladies, please, you're embarrassing both of us.
Thank you, sir. That's such a nice reaction that you get. And you know what? I was not surprised because the women on my staff have been going crazy. Since they found out that you were coming on the program, they've been losing their minds. No one more than my assistant, Sona. This is not a bit that we did for the show. This is not a joke. This is absolutely real. She keeps a cardboard cutout of you next to her desk, and we took a picture of it today. This is real. Wow. No work gets done with that thing around.
Sure.
With the staff, it's got to be it's got to be a nice feeling.
Absolutely. What do you pay for one of those things?
I'll get you one.
Will you?
Yeah. So you can walk around and take pictures of yourself. With yourself. You are, you know, you're so famous now for being a biker, and you're not just an actor who pretends to be a biker. You ride a bike in real life.
Yes, I ride a motorcycle.
And you rode a Harley here to the studio.
I did.
Today.
And normally, when you come to Warner Brothers, they don't let you ride onto the studio. They make you go and park in a secondary car park. But today, being your guest, they let me ride on. So
I will
get you VIP status now.
When you know me, you're pretty much the king of Los Angeles. Didn't intend that to be a laugh line. Now, okay, you take, there are weekend bikers here, especially in Los Angeles, but in every city. Guys
sure.
like to get out on the road and ride
weekend
around.
Warriors.
Yeah, weekend warriors. And I know sometimes they give you flack because on the show you like to wear
white, I wear the white sneakers,
you wear the
which
white
is like
sneakers.
A Southern California thing to do. And I, when I was doing the research for the show, I went up to Oakland, which is the area that Sons of Anarchy takes place in, and got to hang out with a very well-known motorcycle club. And a lot of those guys wore white sneakers. And there was one guy in particular who was like the heir apparent of the club up there. He was basically the character that I play
yep.
in Sons of Anarchy in real life. He'd had every single one of his birthday parties at the clubhouse. And his father was in the club and everything. And I just, you know, he had such an aura about him, this guy. And so I just basically borrowed the
you said he's wearing white sneakers, I'm going to wear white sneakers, but then you started to have people
yeah,
criticize you who wear like the leather and the black boots.
Yeah, and
saying,
they come
that's
up
not
to me and say, hey, bro, why are you wearing white sneakers, man? Motorcycle, you know, bikers wear biker boots. And I say, you wear biker boots because you're a dentist.
During the week. You're riding on the weekend, and suddenly, yeah. You're
and so, you know, you ride a bike every day. You ride in tennis shoes. I mean, sometimes if I'm just going down to the post office or something, I'll ride my bike in flip-flops, you know, whatever's clever.
Why not? Yeah. Paint your toenails and just go for it.
Sure. Get your, you know.
Get a manicure, jump on the bike, and I'll jump on the Harley. Been burglarized, I think more than once, twice,
yes.
and you yourself have confronted the burglar
yes.
and chased him off. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, one always thinks what one would do in a situation like that. And
oh, I
know
what I would do. I would climb
yes.
into the disposal
of
my thing.
Yeah, I would just a panic box, not
yeah.
even a panic room, just a box to hide in.
Well, I get very angry
because
I think, you know, I work hard and I live with my girlfriend and, you know, heaven forbid I would not be there when something like this happened. So, yeah, I went out and confronted them a couple
so
times.
So, okay, tell me the story of what happened. What happened the first time?
The first time I had one of those very cheap garage doors. You know, like the one-piece kind of tin thing. And it was 11 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday, and the guy just ripped it up, you know, bent the thing in half, and was just casual as you like, walking through my backyard, looking for ways into my house and, you know, figuring out how he was going to rob me. And I saw him, and at this point, I only had one weapon in my house, which was a baseball bat next to my bed.
Yeah.
And so I thought, let's get the bat. See what's going to happen. And so I
let's see what's going to happen.
So,
you're like a scientist.
Yeah. That's into my lap.
Yeah.
And so I ran through the house and I grabbed the bat and I came out. I have French doors in my back to the bedroom, and I went out just as he was rounding the side of the house. And he stopped, and I looked at him and I said, "We got business, mother." It was so annoying.
Yeah.
Because it turns out we didn't have business, but he was not intimidated at all.
He started looking for his business. No, I don't
know. He just turned around and casual-like strolled out. I said, "Run!"
That's so amazing. So,
the next time it happens.
I love it the next time.
Well,
by the way, where do you live?
Right in Hollywood. I don't know what the heck.
It's like zombies coming through the window.
So then I made it my business to arm myself.
You had a baseball bat. That's pretty good. But yeah. you want to take it up a notch.
Well, I just accumulated, I'd be somewhere at a swap meet or something. I thought, oh, that would be good. And so,
like a mace?
Yeah. I got a hatchet. I have a samurai sword.
Nice.
But I also have a machete. But it's kind of old and rusted.
Doesn't matter with a machete. It will still get the job done, right?
You apologize first. I'm sorry about the shape my machete's in.
Right. Yeah. How's some of that?
Yeah.
Scoundrel.
Yeah. You had a machete.
And unfortunately, I just have one weapon in each room. So in this particular room...
hanging up everywhere? You can walk into any room and... You can be sitting on the toilet and...
Yeah, you got to be prepared. That's my biggest fear, is to be broken into whilst in the shower. Because then you're wet, you're naked. It's not
keep
a
full view in there.
Yeah. That might arouse suspicion.
Well, we'll move on. So the second time, guy comes to the house, you've got the machete.
Yeah, it was 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was learning my lines, and I had my cat on my knee. And we always hear, he's the little more skittish than I am.
Throw the cat.
Right? Let me tell you, he acts like he's tough. He was out of there. He kind of commandoed out and looked, and I could tell from his reaction that he really saw something, and he was gone. I mean, he looked back a little bit and was like, "Sorry, bro."
He got on his little motorcycle.
Skateboard. And so I had the machete, and I stepped out, and there was this big guy there, and I was just thinking, God, I wish I had a bat, because you can't kind of friendly, it's not a friendly maneuver.
You can't pass someone with a machete.
And I was thinking, if I turned it sideways, I could kind of spank him with it. Not like that, it was a kind of,
He might, one more time. Yeah.
Right. But thankfully he saw the machete and he said, "Okay, I'm gonna get out of here."
I think the word is out. Do not mess with your house. Do not go near your apartment. Leave you alone.
Behold Saskatchewan, the land of living skies of the great Tommy Douglas and Kim Coates. Now, if you don't recognize the name, you'll surely recognize the mug, because Kim has been in some of Hollywood's biggest movies, pictures like Black Hawk Down, Pearl Harbor, The Client.
You talk to the feds tomorrow, I'll kill you. If you tell anyone about me, I'll kill you slow.
Thing is, this guy never really set out to be an actor. In fact, he had never seen a play until he studied drama at the University of Saskatchewan. But once hooked, he dove into the theater, and at the Stratford Festival, became the youngest Macbeth ever. He got to play the role that made Marlon Brando a star, Stanley Kowalski in A Streetcar Named Desire. At an 8, Kim has been in close to 50 movies, done dozens of TV shows, and look, with that kind of output, not everything is going to be, well, A Streetcar Named Desire.
Fair enough, good.
But even in a box office bomb like Battlefield Earth, Kim was really interesting.
There's nothing we can do for them.
He is picky about the types of bad guys he'll play. We'll find out where he draws the line, and he's never wanted to be tied down to a series, but then this came along.
Sends a message to Darby, kill 2 birds with 1 crow.
Tig Traeger, that's right, is a member of Sam Crow on the Sons of Anarchy. On the surface, Tig is a bit of a psycho, but he puts a lot of soul into a character, and he's finally getting the recognition he deserves.
She needs to know he's still loved.
What are you talking about?
Gemma.
Thing that's causing her the most pain.
Just thinking you don't want her anymore.
show. Jim, go!
Good to see you, sir.
Did you call my people and see what I was wearing today? Did my people call your people?
I'm backstage and I'm like, oh, God. This is unbelievable.
Very good together.
But you can't see the details, as he's got pinstripes on.
I do.
You know, which is very nice.
Well, I got dressed up to you, George. James, man. They're hectic, actually. Yeah, it's nice to be in Toronto. Hi, Toronto.
It's an unbelievable time for you.
Yeah.
Work consistently, and then the Sons of Anarchy thing is just almost feels like a game changer to the public. Does it feel like one for you?
It does.
Yeah.
I had no idea of the power of television. I really mean that. I did not get into this business to be a celebrity. I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
You made choices too in that way.
Thanks. Yeah, I did. I mean, I 50 movies, maybe more than that now. I don't know, but I always said no to television when it came to being a regular on a television show. I've done arcs, but never a regular, and it was time to do one. I think cable has some amazing television now, right? I mean, I think there's some amazing. Well written for women too, like awesome parts for women, which is all it makes me really excited actually. So I said yes to Sons of Anarchy, and it's really sort of changed my world. Yeah.
You that's the thing. You are particular about your bad guys. The fact that you even mentioned the fact that cable is a good place for roles for women. This is a series that focuses on the surface the 1% of this outlaw biker gang, but really this is a TV series that showcases strong women.
Absolutely.
This is about Gemma.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, in the biggest way, which is, you know, Katie Siegel's character. But why? Is that because you have daughters? Is this why you are this guy?
I've had no choice. My wife's been slapping me around for 27 years, and I have to back that up as much as I can. And I love strong women, man. That's what makes the world go around.
When you get into a show, knowing that you want to make films and play characters that are important, and you see how bad a bad guy can be. Do you have to really fight with them and say, I can't do this? Most network television now is rape storylines all the time when it comes to girls.
Yeah, I've never played a rapist. I've never played a pedophile. I just won't do it. I just won't do it. But that said,
why won't you do it?
I just won't do it. I just won't. But that said, Costner, who's really close friend of mine, Kevin, he just goes, you know, you're so colorful. The bad guys get the parts. They, you know, they're written for. It's tough to be a leading man. It's tough. You know, I got the easy job. I can do things, cut hair, get fat, wear a mullet like Goon, and, you know, bad ties, and be funny, and work hard. But Kevin has to be a leading man and be interesting. That's hard. If you ask me,
what's the thing about the Sons of Anarchy, the Outlaws? What's the fascination with outlaw culture?
Well, it's Sopranos on bikes, right? I mean, the reviews came out. It was pretty early on that this is a great series because of the Hamlet mythology of it all. For those of you who've seen it, it's very Hamlet based, and I'm a big fan of Hamlet, so we all know it doesn't end good. There's gonna be some more bloodshed, and we're all character actors. Even Katie, beautiful Katie, Charlie Hunnam, right? He's one of those hunky, incredibly talented kids from Newcastle, and we all get along. We all love each other.
The idea of a complicated bad guy, you know, a psychopath with a heart, which your character has, are there things that you just, like, big roles that you've turned down and then seen them later and go, yeah.
Do you know, George, I try not to see the roles I turned down, just in case the guy was good. I can honestly say, though, that I've never regretted. I think that's really important in my business. You're going to make right, wrong, right, medium, but I've never regretted anything that I said yes or no to. Even the ones that I did that didn't turn out the way I wanted, I still feel I gave it, you know, as much as I could.
But you also might be, is he the only actor who's been in three of the biggest, even controversial films? You were in Waterworld, right?
I was.
You were also in Battlefield Earth?
Absolutely.
And Pearl Harbor?
Absolutely.
You're like the only guy who's been in those three films.
Alec Baldwin and I in Pearl Harbor. Oh, my God, what a mistake. Baldwin and I show up, you know, he's playing Doolittle, I'm his right-hand guy, and show up, get the haircut, and I'm looking around and going, why am I the only one who looks like I'm in World War II? Why has everyone got Hollywood haircuts and I've got this buzz, bad oil in my head? And Baldwin and I go, hey, got your lucky strikes yet? I go, no, let's go get them right now. Went to the props guy and said, where are our lucky strikes? The guy, you smoking? I said, it's World War II. We're smoking. My guy smoked 2 packs a day. I know. I looked him up. And he goes, cigarettes. I don't know. We found out that they've been shooting for 5 weeks without us, and Disney didn't want any smoking. So Alec and I refused to listen to that. So we got cut out of that movie like you wouldn't believe.
Really?
Yeah. We had 3 scenes. We saw each other at the premiere and went, I guess we'll not smoke in the next one. They don't want us to. Because we did lose 3 scenes. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So it's not a you don't regret the moment because it must have been a hell of an experience.
It was. It was a big movie.
What was Battlefield like?
Listen.
It's not loaded. I'm not asking you to load it.
It's not loaded, but that's okay.
No, it's not loaded. I'm curious.
You're Canadian royalty.
No. I'm genuinely curious because here's the thing. I actually really liked Waterworld. Yeah. I enjoyed the film. Battlefield, I was fine with it, right? But what was the experience like as an actor when you walk into something that you know is building
it? I'm not a very religious guy. I'm a spiritual guy, I think. I don't even know what I believe in, but I'm not religious. And I have to say that when I walked into the meeting with Roger Christian and the producers, the first question was, okay, so you know this isn't a Scientology movie. That's the first thing that was laid on the table. I said, no worries. I like the script. I hear Barry Pepper's doing it. I'm a big fan of his. Forest Whitaker, love him. And Travolta, who was one of the biggest stars at that time, right? And so we did it, and it didn't work, you know? It didn't work. But that wasn't from lack of trying again. I just think the script was a tad weak.
You know, it's...
What do you think, George?
Listen, I...
Did you buy John in that 8-foot suit?
No.
No.
No, I didn't.
No one did.
But herein lies the rub.
Did you like my extensions?
You pulled it off. Here's what I think that works. There's 3 levels, right? There's that John Travolta megastar where at a certain point you only see the actor more than the character.
That's true.
Then there's the working actor, which is in the bottom, and then there's the guy in the middle, which I think is a great spot to be in, which you appear to be in. Character actor, which is basically a working actor who stands out, you know? And when you set out, like when you were in theater in Saskatchewan,
sure,
you know, or you moved out to the East Coast,
sure,
did you have an idea of what kind of career you wanted to put together?
I just wanted to be a really good actor. And when I first got to Toronto, again, all true, my agent at the time, wow, tough guy. Blue eyes, ooh, let's get you in the films, right? I said, no, it's not happening. I'm not going to, I need to do more theater. I think I did like 27 or 28 professional plays, including Stratford and Broadway, and before I did my first movie. So I'm really
young as Macbeth. What are you,
26? 27,
I think 27,
yeah.
At the time, the youngest?
Yeah, I think the youngest Macbeth ever, yeah. John Neville directed me. It was really, yeah, it was great.
I want to show you a photo here. I want to show you a photo. Pull this photo up here. Look at this. Let's go back to 1979.
Look at that arm.
Yeah. That's called Creeps. Right? 1979.
What's with the pose? What's with the pose?
I got these photos from the University of Saskatchewan Drama Department. I want to look at this one here. This is you're practicing to be Jean Chrétien. Right here. Taming of the Shrews. But didn't Creeps go to Edinburgh? That was a pretty
good... Yeah.
What was that experience
like? Then I knew I had to be an actor. That's when I came home. I remember going up to my girlfriend, now wife, Diana Chappell, and saying, I think I want to be an actor. What do you think? She said, ooh. Okay. I guess I'll have to work a lot. I didn't really see that happening. And then my buddies, too, they all said, wow, you know, great. Knock it out of the park. And they're more happy for me than I am, I think, now, really, weirdly enough. They save all the clip things. And
it's a pretty big moment. I realize it is like an athlete in the sense that it does take a village to make somebody successful in their life, doesn't it?
It's important to have friends like that.
It's the same year as this picture, 1980. Let's go to the next one here. I like this one. Play it again, Sam.
Look at that hair. I worry about my hair now, let alone then.
Back then? A successful career is one thing, but you've been with your girl for, 27 years?
Yeah, marriage, yeah. Longer than that.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
But do you choose roles now knowing that fact that you have daughters who are old enough to say, that's my dad?
No.
No?
My daughters have nothing to do with what I choose. But it does have something to do with what they can see.
Really?
Yeah. I was so happy to do a movie called Carpool in 1995. It was a kids' movie. So that my kids could actually see something that daddy was in. Because I don't think they ever thought that daddy really acted because it was
there's nothing that Diana could show them that I was in because it was pretty, but Brenna, my little one, I guess I wasn't there, but Diana said that when she took Brenna to see Garfo on the big screen, all she did was cry. She thought I was gone. I've gone to movie heaven. I don't know what.
Yes, no. Come back.
That'll come out in therapy, though, later.
Yeah, it
sure will. Stick around. When we come back, I'm going to talk to Kimbo a couple things. Before we start, the best Kowalski of Dracula.
What you want for the women?
Not for sale.
Not for sale. I mean, there's no such thing as not for sale. Not for sale. Not for sale.
Not.
Are they a pair, or would you consider selling them separate?
No. Our business is done here unless you've got some res under sale you can part with.
Black in that film too, right?
Yeah, it's great.
You were close with your family?
Yes.
Your father passed away just as Sons was starting to become something.
Correct.
What would you have thought of this?
Dad was always the most proud. Dad and my mom. I mean, they met a bowling alley.
That's pretty great.
Safeway and Eaton's. I mean, right? I mean, we'd be an actor. A what? Like my mom. I love my mother. I just did a movie in Saskatoon. I did two actually. The hotbed of movie making. Who knew?
Right.
I stayed with my mother. I didn't stay at the Best, bro. I stayed with my mom.
That's amazing.
And my mom said to me, she just said to me, I didn't realize you had to work so hard. I just thought you memorized things. And I go, that's right, Mom. It's all magic.
How long did you stay with her?
2.5 weeks. This project, a month before that.
It's been quite a lot of people going to stay with my family, but obviously you did that on
purpose. I'll never do it again.
I mean, it was fun. So you play Biker in Sons of Anarchy, right?
Yeah.
All right, so if you had to in your real life, crotch rocket, dirt bike, Harley.
Harley.
Come on.
I have it.
All right. Macbeth, Stanley Kowalski, or Dracula, play them all on stage. Which is most like your personality?
Kowalski.
Can you say Macbeth now, or do you still have to call it the Scottish play?
No, you can say Mac as long as we're not in the theater. This is sort of a CBC, sort of bastardized theater. So you can say Macbeth.
Who do you think out there in the world needs a good punch in the face?
Every GOP candidate.
Everyone,
every single one.
Is that when you feel most Canadian, when you watch the American Republic?
I never not feel most Canadian, George.
Really?
I love the weather. I love my palm trees. I love that I love going everywhere to work. But I'm Canadian through and through.
All right. When was the last time you cried?
Pretty much every day. Pathetic Monsters, Inc., probably.
Really? Great to see you, man.
No, it's not George.
Here's all everybody. Sons of Anarchy, FX Canada. We'll be right back.
On that note, I'm gonna end it early today, but I want everybody to know that Emilio will be here first up, 6:05, between 6 and 6:05. He'll be here to talk about his career, where he's going, what he's doing, and answer questions. And I'm going to let Rusty take us out with a little, let's see here, Into the Blackness. And I'll talk to everybody tomorrow night. Good night, guys.